Welcome to the Successful Athletes Podcast presented by Trainer Road, where we interview successful athletes to make you a faster cyclist. And they're athletes just like you and I. So it's a lot of fun. Today we have Melissa Perowski with us. How are you doing, Melissa?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, this is fun. So you actually wrote a question into the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast, and you just like casually mentioned the fact that you did a double Ironman, which blew my mind. and you had other questions about training, and I was like, hold on, we got to talk about the double Ironman too. So this is, can you explain what a double Ironman is? And then just briefly, and then we'll get into the context of you as an athlete and as a person.
Sure. I'd love to. So the IUTA, International Ultra Tri, they put on ultra distance triathlons. So a double anvil is what they refer to it as. And it is just a double full distance Ironman length. So instead of doing a 2.4 mile swim, you're doing a 4.8 mile swim. And you're doing 224 miles on the bike and 52.4 miles running.
Holy cow. I've never, I think the furthest I've, that's the furthest I've ever ridden on a bike.
Me too.
I can't imagine ever doing that again, much less in the context of a double Ironman. Oh my gosh. So we're going to get into talking all of, well, actually let's just talk about that right now. What the heck made you want to do that? That sounds so intimidating to me. And I'm sure to most people listening.
It's so funny you say that because you get excited about it and you sign up for it and then it gets close and you go, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? Am I going to make this? but you know, I think the onset of the pandemic kind of got it in my mind. I was supposed to do Ironman Nice in June 2020. And I was super excited to travel over there and it, you know, we couldn't go. And so I thought, all right, I'm just going to train super hard all summer and I'm going to do this double Ironman because it was in the back of my mind and it was in March. And so I thought, okay, I'll just be able to train all summer since I'm a teacher and I have the summers off and I'll just create this base. And then I'll, you know, keep going through the fall when who knows what our schedule will look like teaching. And so it was just exciting at the time to have something to train for, because that's what I live for. I live for like, what am I doing next? Mm-hmm. And getting ready and doing all of that training. That's the exciting part to me.
Yeah. And what an exciting thing to train for, because it is so big, so daunting.
Right. Exactly.
You mentioned you're a teacher. What do you teach and where are you based out of?
So I live in Marietta, Georgia, and I work for Marietta City School District, best district ever to work for. but I'm a math teacher. I teach high school math. I teach 2 accelerated courses. So I have 9th, 10th, and 11th graders and mixture in all my classes. So
that's particularly tough. Throughout this whole year, what's your schedule been like for teaching?
It has been interesting, but our district is so supportive and they have allowed our students to do a hybrid model. And so we are teaching kids face-to-face that choose to come in face-to-face. And then at the same time, we have a Zoom running and we have our virtual students on Zoom. So we're kind of talking to both. Are you guys okay? Are you guys okay? But the students can make that choice each day. So if they want to come in one day for their math class and, you know, go through that day regular, and then they can be virtual again the next day. So
that's
worked out really well.
That's a high stress job. Like it's a lot of work every day. You have a lot of stuff to prepare for. It's clear that you enjoy your job as well. So it's not like it's like, you know, I guess a negative draw in that regard, but at the same time, it's a lot of stress, I'm sure. Just prepping for that. And boy, I was rough on my high school math teachers. So I'm sure that you have that at times too, but, you also, what's your family situation like too, though? You're a mother, correct?
I am. Yes. I'm married. I have a son who's 8 years old. He plays baseball. So we are out at the ball fields a lot doing those, or he's got a sport every season. So we're somewhere running around with him. So that's fun. And, I'm also working on my EDD, my doctoral degree, in post-secondary math education. So that's been really fun. I just enjoy being in school still. I'm not sure what I'm going to do after the doctorate because I like being in school. So I'm thinking, what should I do next? So that's just another, you know, part of the planning that goes into when I'm trying to get my routine for the training.
So you have a lot going on. When do you fit your training in?
So I'm a morning person. I get up at about 3:45 and wow. I get about a 2 hour. During the week, I like to do about 2 hours each morning. And I just follow my trainer road plan. And if the workout, I feel like I need to extend the workout, then I will use the exact same, like if it's threshold or sweet spot, I'll find that exact same workout with that exact same intensity factor and just search for a different duration. Mm-hmm. And so I keep it about 2 hours each morning. And then on Saturdays and Sundays, I'm usually doing 4 to 6 hours on Saturday, still trying to match what Trainer Road has for me. And then on Sunday, I'm about a 3 hour. So
you're doing the plan. It sounds like, and which plan did you follow actually? Which Trainer Road plans do you follow? Or did you follow for this event in particular?
I'm doing the mid volume plan. And so it's got the swim, bike, and runs in there for me. And it was awesome to be able to, you can choose your days, you know? So I'm like, Saturday's my long day, Sunday's my long run. I can put my swims here. So I love that part of it, to be able to move that stuff around to fit your schedule. So that plan is, and I actually bumped that up from when I was training for Cork Ironman in 2019, I was using the low volume. And then when I decided to do the double, I thought, I better bump this up to the mid volume.
And then you just make those weekend rides, or when you have the opportunity, you just tack on extra to be able to get some more volume with that.
Yep, exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about the scheduling of everything and with your training and then with nutrition. So waking up at 3:45, that's super early. How do you fuel those workouts? Do you just try to fuel when you're on the bike? Do you try to get anything in between waking up and getting on the bike? Or is it just you eat a lot thereafter? Or I should say, it shouldn't say a lot, but you nourish yourself throughout the day,
right,
considering the work you've already done.
It's more of that last thing you said. So I actually read a little bit about, you know, a double and was trying to kind of get what other people had done. And one of the things you guys have talked about on your podcast is the fasted workouts. So I had learned that, like, you know, it would be good to kind of train your body that you're going to be out there for 30 hours, you know, to get used to maybe not having that fuel that whole time you're out there. And so when I do my 2 hour morning workouts, I try to do those as fasted workouts. So I'll have like a half a cup of coffee right when I get up and take it straight down on the trainer and get right on. So, or just drink a half cup before I do a long run in the morning. On the longer ones, when it's 4 to 6 hours, I'll take gels down. I use the Huma gels or the Martin gels. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but I love that one.
Either do I. I don't know if I say it right either. Martin. I don't know.
Yeah. And just the Martin saved my life in the double. I took the caffeine one at about 3 a.m. when I actually thought I might have fallen asleep for a couple minutes walking. I went straight to my tent and took the Martin caffeine. And I was like, 10 minutes later, I'm just, this is great. Having the best time. So, oh my gosh, it saved me. But on the longer workouts, I'll take the gels with me and make sure that I'm doing a better job of keeping it up. But that was helpful, I think, to really try and go without to prepare for that long period of time.
Certainly. This is like an edge case of edge cases in terms of the typical folks that we have on the Successful Athletes podcast, right? These events are just so long. It's kind of a different ball of wax. Do you have any other nutrition principles that you follow to try to guide yourself along, keep your training high quality or fuel the efforts, anything else? Anything you've found that's been helpful?
I do watch what I eat. Getting ready for this, I was trying to become more fit. So, you know, I lost some weight getting ready for this double. And I was really trying to work on, you know, I was doing yoga at night, and eating wise, I eat a plant-based diet pretty much, except for, you know, at night I will eat meat protein. I use the collagen. We were obsessed with that Trainer Road podcast. My sister and brother-in-law, we all listened to this and we were researching all of that. And so now we all have the collagen. So that's been, I don't know if I'm just wishful thinking, but I feel like that collagen has saved me from injury during this. Mm-hmm. It's just I take it every day and I mix emergent C in there, vitamin C. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like it's really been helpful. So maybe that might be self-fulfilling prophecy, but that's something that I'm going to keep doing. And, you know, I try and not eat a ton of refined sugars. I will, you know, have it when I'm during the workouts and everything. I'll have, because it'll be in the gels, or, you know, I'll have Powerade and water mixed together on my bike. But it, during the day, I try and stay away from sugars. So
sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Plan.
So, and then do you, how do you time your meals with your job and with everything else after this early morning workout? When do you eat, and then when do you go to work, and how do you do that?
So, my husband laughs because I make my breakfast and then eat it in the car on the way to work. And so he's going, okay, please drive safely with the three things that you just took out holding to eat in the car on the way to work.
Right.
but, and we, you know, we have 22 minutes for lunch. So, you know, I pack my little lunch, and I just eat it in my classroom during, during our lunch period. But then, you know, we cook dinner every night. So with my son, and we eat dinner together. So we try and prepare, you know, good, healthy meals at night. So, and do I take little snacks for during the day and stuff.
That was going to be my next question, is if you're able to sneak in some snacks and some stuff, and whether it's in between classes or even probably during, you're probably able to, right?
Yes. And that I really try and focus on the hydration, because you are, you know, you're teaching for 90 minutes, so you can't drink all of your water at once. That will not, that will not work well for you in those 90 minutes. So you have to kind of plan it out. But I really, really focus on that, because I can tell the days where I've done a hard workout and I haven't had enough water. So I really try and focus on that.
Yeah. So with the job of teaching, you really have to be kind of like always on throughout the day. Is that mentally tough? And have you noticed that affecting subsequent workouts? So, you know, like you do your bike work early in the morning, but then if you have any workouts that you do later on in the day, and how do you balance the stress?
No, that's a great question. I think, so I do all of my trainer road workouts in the morning always. But what I did adopt, like, and partially this was to get ready for the double, is every night after dinner, about 6 o'clock, I'll go on a walk. About 2 hour, hour and a half to 2 hour walk. And it was helpful to clear my mind from the day, think about what I'm doing the next day, just be by myself. I listen to the podcasts on the walk, but it's just a time to just be by myself for a little while. But I really think that was one of the things that ended up helping me in the double, because I had done, I mean, you're walking, but you know, you're still, it's still like, you, the next day your legs are a little bit tired. So then you're hopping on to do a hard bike workout and you've done, you know, a 5-6 mile walk the night before, like 12 hours before that. So I think that that actually helped me quite a bit to get ready for how tired I was going to be when I got off the bike in the double.
Yeah. It kind of one of those unintended benefits that comes from that, right? Mm-hmm. That's cool. Do you, when you've had to make, or throughout the whole training process, I'm sure you discovered things that were particularly tough for you. What was hardest in the training process for you? Like, what things were you really frustrated about, or that held you back, or you felt like you couldn't unlock them, or just weren't good at them?
Oh, wow. Okay. So I got into these ultras because I'm not fast at all. So, I, you know, like we were kind of discussing earlier about cycling being intimidating to me. It's definitely, of the three sports, the one that I'm not the best at. So I swam, you know, on the swim team in high school, and not just like the summer rec league, but, and I was a runner. So I felt confident with those sports, but I've never felt confident with biking until I actually went and did this double. I thought, okay, this is for me. You know, I can't go out and race with these Ironman guys, but I feel like I can do this. And I feel like Trainer Road helped me get there doing that. So that part can be frustrating when you're starting out and you're like, you know, I'm in the bottom, you know, third of this group, and I don't have the same equipment, you know, that all of these people have. This equipment's awesome, you know? But I don't know. I think you pick out what you like doing. And I like challenging myself to be out there longer rather than trying to race something. You just kind of realize your strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah. Did you, with, integrating the running into that, did you notice any, because this is a big concern personally for me, like you've got running and you've got swimming, you've done those individually, right, maybe even together, but then when you do all three of them, Did you have to reset your expectations on the running side because of the bike?
Absolutely. The very first, that's so funny you say that, because the first Ironman I did was just, I think back and I go, oh my gosh, that was so bad. Because I had done a 100-mile ultra and I thought, okay, I did 100 miles. Like, I can do an Ironman. Come on. And I thought, and I kept telling myself, the minute you get off the bike, you're going to be great because running is your sport, you know? No, absolutely not. It was awful. It was a terrible run. I got sick during the run. Like, oh. And so that's something that I've really focused on. And I do love the brick workouts in the app. That's something that's really just changed how I feel when I get off the bike. Just even when it's, you know, you'll do an hour and a half bike and it'll just be just a little 30-minute brick run. Just the fact of getting off the bike and running right away, that was just so helpful.
Yeah. On the swimming side, since you had, you know, swam before, did you find that you were able to carry your same splits into your races that you knew you could swim in terms of like PR pace? Or did you really drop it down for this double and swim at a much more conservative pace?
So that's funny you mentioned that, because I did try and slow it down for this double. I was like, what I do when I was planning for this was I look at the time limit and I say, okay, we have 32 hours. I'm going to do it in 31 hours and 59 minutes. And anything that's better than that, I'm going to be proud of. So we had 36 hours. And so The fact that I ended up doing it in 32, I was happy with, but that's what I do. I say, this is how long I have. And I don't care if I'm last, I just want to finish. So I ended up, when I was doing the swim, you know, I was pacing myself and just take your time, just enjoy your swim. Sometimes I get anxious before the swim. Mm-hmm. And we were able to wear a wetsuit because it was 65 degrees, and it was just calm. And it was my best swim I've had.
That's so awesome.
My splits were better than they are, you know, in the pool. And I know that's because of the wetsuit, but I think it's also just take your time and, you know, don't get over anxious and don't try and hurry. But when I got out, the race director comes running over and is like, okay, you're first out of the water. Here's what you need to do next. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? I've never heard this word in my life.
What a cool surprise. Yeah. How did you build a pacing plan in general for it? We just talked about the swim, but like, were you thinking that you were going to, I don't know if you had a power meter on your bike outside or if you were just going to go by miles per hour or heart rate, or how are you planning to pace on the bike and then on the run too?
Right. So I don't have a power meter on my bike. I was thinking in my head miles per hour, but what I did was I said, okay, I have 36 hours. I want to do the swim and the bike in 20. I want to do those both in 20 hours. That leaves me 16 hours to do the run. I had no idea how I was going to feel when I got off the bike because it's 224 miles. And like I said, I'd never gone that far until that day. And so I thought, okay, if I can do it in 20 hours, then that leaves me like 19 minutes a mile. Like I can still finish this and I can walk that, you know, I didn't want to, but I thought I could do that. And so, that's kind of what those loose goals I had in my mind. I was hoping I could average 15 miles an hour, but I ended up averaging about 14 and a half on the bike. So, my full bike was about 16 hours. But that's like including all of the stops. So I was trying to use my watch and I think it was about 15 and a half, you know, if you stopped it during when I got off the bike and stuff.
And I guess probably those stops are coming because of nutrition breaks as well. Yeah. I assume largely driven by that. What was your nutrition plan for something so long?
I know. I should have probably had a more structured plan, but I brought what I knew I liked and I brought my gels that I knew I liked. You know, I mixed Powerade and water because that's all I had tried. Like my dad once told me, you know, never try something new on race day, you know, and I will never forget that because I've just grown up running with him. And so, you know, I had some pretzels and I had some things in our crew tent that I knew would be okay for me to eat on the bike. I can eat anything running. Like you can hand me a piece of pizza, I can keep running. But when I'm doing the bike, there are specific things I have to stick to. And I have learned this the hard way. And so I just kept my usuals around and I would, you know, stop back by. I would have things in my pockets and I would stop back by when I needed to. But I don't like to get off the bike often. I'm afraid if I get off and sit down, I'm not going to get back on.
Sure.
So
did you make any adjustments to your bike in terms of equipment for such a long ride?
I
assume you were probably running lights at some point.
Yes. Okay. So I took two bikes with me. I have an older road bike that I used when I first started cycling. And then I have my newer bike that I use all the time for racing. So I brought both of them because I thought, you know, okay, if something happens and I need, you know, my husband to like change my tire, I can take this other bike out. Or maybe I'll just be super uncomfortable and I'll just want a different position, you know, but I ended up never using the second bike. I stayed on my bike the whole time. I did not make any other adjustments to it. I just, I have a road bike, like I was saying, and I have tri bars on it just to have a different position on there. We did go into pitch black and there were no lights on the course. So we had to have, you know, just like the front light on the front flashlight on the front of the bike. And then we had to have flashing lights on our back. So what I did was I just aligned my bike on the white line and then it lit up the white line and I just followed the white line the whole way.
Just kind of in a tunnel of dark, like you had a little like orb of light around you.
Yes, it was. And then you could see like other cyclists coming up. You're like, oh, hey.
Wow.
So did
that throw your pacing off at all? Because we've heard that from people before. And I've even experienced it personally. When you ride at night, just the perception is entirely different.
Mm-hmm.
Did that change your pacing? Did you notice yourself riding slower, faster?
I did.
Or perceiving the effort to be more difficult?
I did notice myself moving slower. I was just a little bit more nervous with it being dark. And it was nice because it was a 6.07 mile loop. So we had to do it 37 times.
Wow. So it's like Everesting.
I know. So it was nice to like pass your crew often, you know, because it's like, okay, I'll be back in 20 minutes. I can get something if I forgot it. And it made you feel a little bit less anxious at night, but my pacing was, you know, definitely slowed once it was dark outside.
What sort of like, I'm sure you, things went awry probably more than once during that race. It's so long.
I did.
when did that happen? What happened and how did you recover?
My front flashlight started flashing that the low battery was coming. So of course I'm going, great. If this goes out, I'm going to have to wait for another cyclist to lead me in. You know, it was that dark. So the next time I went around, it didn't die. I grabbed another, like my headlamp, I grabbed that and I took that with me and it died on my way back the second time. And so I just wore the headlamp till I got in and then I replaced my flashlight.
Wow.
So that was interesting. And a snake did come out. Which I was now I'm not running because I just saw this snake. So there's no way I'm going out on the run on this. But that was pretty funny. But there weren't any, you know, I always worry about a flat tire or things like that, but there weren't any other sort of crazy things that came up. So that
what about motivational or even like emotional low points throughout the race? Did you hit any?
I did. And I would say it was in the beginning of the bike, you know, it was like miles, you know, 40 to 90. I was just thinking like, gosh, I have a lot left, you know, and I didn't feel bad. I felt okay. But I just thought, oh my gosh, like, how am I going to mentally process this? You know, I have 25 laps left, you know, so I felt the best 100 miles to 200 miles. I felt great. And, you know, there's not a ton of people in this race. So we're all kind of spread out. And anytime I would come up next to somebody and we would start chatting, that's when the time would fly by. You know, you start talking to somebody and you're like, okay, wow, I just finished a whole lap.
Yeah.
But I just tried to break it into chunks. I would say, okay, I'm going to do 3 laps and then I'm going to stop and talk to my husband for a second and get a goo and, you know, I tried to break it up like that so I could have little tiny goals.
Mm. Yeah. So instead of putting all the weight on the outcome or the big, you know, big, hairy, audacious goal that sits in front of you.
Right.
Just looking at the small things that you can do and just making those steps.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that's something that you basically do that as a teacher all the time. But that's true. It's a great example, though, that even though we know these things beforehand, when you get into the race, it doesn't matter how much you know it, just circumstances sometimes put us in spots where we have to, you know, we have to tell ourselves and prove to ourselves that we do know that. It's hard to do.
Exactly right. It's so mental.
Yeah, it really is. On the run, what was your plan there? You mentioned to give yourself the allotted time so that you could walk the thing and right. do it at a 19-mile pace. Did you have a plan to intentionally walk, run?
Yes,
and then did your nutrition change from the bike to the run as well?
It did. So both of those, yes. So I ended up getting off the bike at about 2 a.m. And the run was awesome. It was just at an out and back 1 mile. So it was just out, you got your lap counted. And then you came back. So half a mile out, half a mile back. And I thought, okay, so I'm just going to try and run out and then I'll walk back. And I felt great when I got off the bike. I was like, okay, I don't feel as bad as I thought. This is good. And so I started running a little bit more. I was doing like 3/4 of a mile, walk a 1/4 of a mile. But that is when I got super, super sleepy and I had to do the Martin. And that helped, that changed me. From then on, I felt so much better. It was just that one gel. But so I was keeping up the walking and the running. That was helpful. And when the sun came up, it started to get really, really hot. It was so the race was in Florida, mid Florida, kind of near Orlando.
Okay.
And you know, we hadn't trained. None of us had that were in this race had trained in heat, really. You know, there was people from New York and Wisconsin, and they were like, it's been 30 degrees. And so we were trying to be really careful in the heat, but that definitely changed my nutrition. I was trying to be really careful because the heat tends to work with my stomach a little bit. So I was trying to really monitor what I was taking in, and I'm still trying to take in enough, but not overdo it.
Yeah. So was it just cutting back on quantity, or were you looking to avoid certain things or take in a different type of food?
It was all of those things. I was trying to lower the quantity a little bit. I was trying not to over drink a ton of liquid. And just kind of what I was feeling like. If I thought about a gel and I thought, oh, then I just wouldn't have that. You know, I would like, let me eat a pretzel real quick with some salt. You know, sure. So I just tried to kind of do it by feeling how I felt at the time.
Yeah. So what was your final time for this race?
So final time was 32 hours, 16 minutes.
Holy cow. That is so impressive.
Thank you.
So, and you had 36 hours was the cutoff time.
Correct.
And you were basically just like, I just want to make it in under that 36 hours. You ended up doing 32.
Yes.
That's super impressive.
I was excited. That was a fun part of it.
Yeah. So after this, like I said, the longest thing I've done is like 220 miles. And I was like, yeah, never again.
I thought that too when I got off. I thought I'm never doing this again. But then you did. You only remember the good parts.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's next then? What are your plans for the next event or focus?
So they were holding the world championship in Oregon. It was supposed to be in June, but they ended up having to cancel it due to the COVID restrictions that are going on in Oregon right now. So they are holding another, I say they, because Steve Kirby is the race director. He's just the salt of the earth. Just will loan you his bike. If your bike has a flat tire, you can use his during the race. And so he's planning, they do one in Virginia. They do, Oregon and they do Florida. So Virginia is in October, and I've already signed up for the triple distance for Virginia. So I'm going to give that a try.
Is there anything that you learned from the last time that you're going to apply moving or change moving forward for the prepping for a triple, which is just, that's a lot.
it's a lot. I know. Yeah. I sign up for these things and I get super excited about the training for it and how exciting it's going to be. And then it comes up and I go, ooh, I'm very nervous about this. I can't believe I signed up for this. There were a couple things I think I might think about. The watch. I did not think about my GPS watch, and it has a 36 hour limit. So I thought, okay, I'm good. 36 hours, I'll be fine. And it died 30 hours and it completely died, and I was heartbroken because I'm like, my Tata, like my longest run ever, like, oh my, or my longest bike. Yeah.
If it's not on Strava, it doesn't count, right?
I know. Oh my gosh. It's so funny you say that, because that's exactly what I was thinking. Like my brother-in-law and sister are going to be like, sure.
Yeah.
But it actually posted the swim, the bike, and part of the run, even though my watch died. But wow. What I learned is I need to bring two watches. Definitely. I started wearing my helmet on the trainer. Just down in my basement. It's, you know, my husband will come down and be like, safety first. Good job. All right. Listen. But I'm going to keep, I didn't start that till late into the training for the double, and I'm going to do it all the time. I think that was really helpful just to have that little bit of extra weight on your neck. I think that was really helpful.
When you're talking about something that long, those small little differences with, particularly with equipment, can make a huge difference. Absolutely. They add up.
And I need to practice sighting in the pool. I do all of my swimming in the pool, and I'm just having a great time swimming laps, listening to music. And I need to practice sighting, because, you know, you're all the way out, you're following the buoys and back, and then you get on the bike and my neck is automatically killing me.
Yeah.
You know? Certainly. And so I'm like, that's your fault. That's something you can fix. So that's, I'm going to work on that for this as well.
So I've got, just to wrap up, I have a few questions. How does being a math teacher make you a better or worse endurance athlete?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. Okay, so the math part, I do a lot of calculating while I'm in the race.
But probably way better, because I do a lot of calculations, but I'm almost positive they're wrong. Whenever, like, I suddenly become a mathematician when I'm like halfway through a sweet spot interval, right? And like, doing crazy fractions, trying to encourage myself. But,
yes, sir. Yeah. So I'm just frequently trying to say, okay, if I do this, then this will happen. I'll adjust it this way. And, but I love being a teacher. And aside from the math part, you know, I love meeting people on these races. I think this is why, you know, I love these ultras. It's relaxed. And, you know, I think just the personality of me and being a teacher, you know, allows me to be a little bit more outgoing with people. And I've met people that I'm still in touch with. They're coming to Virginia to do the triple as well. So, you know, hopefully being a teacher has made me better getting to know people, and I've gotten, you know, that's what I've learned and gotten to experience through all of this. So it's been really fun.
And the last one, what, being a mother, how has that been a challenge for you as an endurance athlete? And then how does it also benefit you as an endurance athlete?
That's another great question. Well, there's no way that I could do this without my husband's support. And my parents, they live 4 miles down the road, and my sister and my brother-in-law also live right down the road. And in fact, my brother-in-law loves y'all so much. I'm surprised he hasn't like jumped through the window trying to talk to you. He could not believe this was happening today, but, their support is just, that's how I'm able to do it. You know, my husband will take my son Carter somewhere when I have to do a 6-hour bike ride. But also I try and not miss anything with him by getting up at 3:45 and doing it, you know, in the morning before he's even awake. So when I get done, I go wake him up. So I try to work around my family, because, you know, that's number one to me. But I couldn't do it without their support either. So I'm very appreciative.
For sure. Melissa, you're an inspiration to me. As soon as I read this, I was like, holy cow, like, this is so cool. Just the circumstances in which you do this, the fact that it's a double Ironman and you did it is just so impressive. So,
thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. If anybody has questions, I don't know if you're on social media or anything else where people can get in touch with you, or if not, they can just get in touch with me and I can funnel it to you via email. Is there any way that you prefer people ask questions?
No, I would love to answer questions. I'm on Facebook and I'm on Instagram. Melissa Perowski, and, you know, M Perowski is my Instagram, and I love to answer any questions. I'm happy to help. I'm not on very often. but, you know, I'd love to get more into it. If anybody has questions, I would be happy to talk about it. It's really fun to talk about it with somebody that also is interested in it, you know?
Sure. Yeah, so. No doubt. This is awesome. Well, thank you so much, Melissa. After this call, let's talk some more details specifically on your training, on how you're going to prep for this triple and stuff.
Yes, I would love to.
It'll be a lot of fun. But if anybody's listening to this and wants to come onto this podcast and share your story, just how Melissa has here about how Trainer Road has helped her accomplish something. It doesn't have to be something as uber impressive as a double Ironman. It could be anything that you feel is any measure of success. Even if you don't feel it's successful, chances are you've been successful. So reach out. You can do it at trainerroad.com/SAP. And there's a form where you can share how Trainer Road has helped you achieve any level of success. And I'd love to hear from you. So please do that. And if you want to become a faster athlete like Melissa, you can do so. Just go to trainerroad.com. So thanks everybody for joining us this week, and we will talk to you next time.